Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, hello everyone, and welcome once again to Wrestle Chat Radio's SmackDown Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York, and for the next hour, we will be discussing this week's SmackDown Live at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486. If you'd like to talk to us live, of course, you can always hit us up in the chat room. We'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Well, folks, before we get started reviewing this week's SmackDown, we do have a couple of news items coming from Raw that we should address. The first one being that Enzo Amore, as many of you heard on Raw, Enzo Amore had the flu. This was not a work. It was a shoot. Enzo Amore was indeed sick, maybe sicker than people thought. He apparently checked himself out of a hospital and was backstage at Raw trying to convince anyone who would listen that he was fine to wrestle. He was told to go back to the hotel room. He was told absolutely not going to be wrestling after he just came out of a hospital. To further that, apparently they were correct, because now he's been removed from the mixed match tournament that's going to be taking place on Facebook Live. And the reason given for him being removed from that is that he is still suffering from the flu. So apparently Enzo Amore really sidelined with a heavy flu. Now, for the benefit of you people who remember not very long ago, Bray Wyatt, Bo Dallas, several people sidelined, Roman Reigns, to an extent, sidelined with, an illness as well. They don't want this going around the locker room. They don't want to be wiped out by this. Braun Strowman had already gotten it. But I guess he managed to shake it off. And the word is that some wrestlers backstage were actually getting IVs who were feeling not so well, trying to nip it in the bud, so to speak, before an epidemic of the flu wipes out WWE. Now, normally I'd people say to me, oh, come on, the wrestlers, they wrestle sick all the time. I mean, this is common. You're right, it is. So when they are told to go home, my assumption is it's fairly serious, and they're worried about an epidemic. They're worried about 10 people getting struck down with it and wiping out an entire 2 weeks, 3 weeks worth of shows. So Enzo Amore will not be in the mixed match tournament. Enzo Amore will not be on Raw. And upcoming in this 205 Live tour, I don't know if Enzo Amore will be there. I would have to think the answer is no. So that's a very interesting circumstance, and we'll keep you updated if anybody else drops out with the flu or pneumonia or whatever it happens to be that Enzo Amore has. The second thing we want to address is that Paige was there. She did appear, but she did not wrestle. And, of course, for the benefit of people who do not know, she was kicked relatively hard in the back of the head by Sasha Banks. I believe it was in New Jersey at a house show in New Jersey. The match was stopped. Sasha looked visibly upset. But later on, people reported that Paige was fine. She was out hanging out in the hotel bar, and she seemed fine, but they have not cleared her. So they're erring on the side of caution with all this, you know, problems with her neck and the concussion issue floating around. I guess they're simply waiting until they know for 100% certain that she's ready to compete. And the third item of news, which really has nothing to do with WWE, but of course, Wrestle Kingdom had their big show. And while we don't normally review it, I do suggest very highly that you watch this show if you can. Brilliant show, a lot of great wrestling on that show. But air of controversy, because Chris Jericho apparently on Twitter dedicated his match to Chris Benoit, which caused a firestorm of people who were very eager to remind Chris Jericho, that Chris Benoit killed his wife and 7-year-old son. Chris Jericho then responded in a very passionate way, saying, "No one knows that better than me. I think about that every single day of my life. I had my reasons for doing what I did, and I don't care to be second-guessed by people who don't understand what's going on." Now, normally I take people to task for saying fans don't understand what's going on and things like this, but in this particular case, I do not, because this is a personal thing. If you're a very close friend of someone, and that someone does something horrific, such as Chris Benoit has been accused of doing, and takes his own life, and you feel very strongly, as I think Y2J does, that Chris Benoit's state of mind was brought about by drugs, brought about by years of concussion and abuse and brain trauma, there's a part of you that still feels sympathy for the entire situation. And there's a part of you, if you're an athlete, that can separate the man from what he accomplished in the sport. And of course, everybody knows about Chris Benoit in Japan and things. So I'm like, listen, I'm not getting all over Y2J about this. If he feels that was his friend, if he feels he wants to dedicate a match to him, I'm not really sure it's anybody's business, number one. It's, you know, it's not exactly like dedicating a match to Charles Manson. You know, so I know that's going to be controversial, but to be honest, I just don't see a huge problem with that. And I think people who wrote him on Twitter to say, "Need I remind you," were really being, what's the right word for it? It was unnecessary. Chris Benoit's actions, no one has forgotten them, let alone those closest to him. But it doesn't negate what he did as a professional either. To those who were close enough to him, it's seen as a tragedy on all scales. So take it for what it's worth. Jericho said he will never talk about the incident again. So that's interesting. Let's go to the phone, see if Mike has any comments on any of these things. Enzo, Page, or Chris Jericho. Mike, what's your thoughts on these?
I really have nothing on either one. I mean, Chris Jericho, I mean, just remember, they all came to the WWE at the same time and all that stuff. So, I mean, and they grew up, particularly Chris Jericho and Benoit, they probably grew up going through the Canadian system together. They've been to Japan. They've been to Japan together. So I have nothing to say about that. And we know the whole thing with Paige and her neck. And I get what they're doing with Enzo. Now, I mean, if it's just a flu and it's a 2-week thing, then he ought to be back, and it ought to not threaten his time as the 205 Live champion. But if it's longer than that, then they're going to have to make a decision on Enzo if this whole thing is longer than that. Because generally speaking, if this was the old days, he would have 30 days to defend that title. You know?
Right. And they would, well, I'm sure he'll be back within the 30 days, but I'll tell you the truth. I'm going to the 205 Live show in the Mid-Hudson Civic Center in Poughkeepsie, and I have no thought that he'll be there. I don't, you know, that's just in a few weeks, and maybe he'll be there. Maybe he'll be fine by then. But I would think that they try to keep him away from house shows to try to save him for whatever TV tapings or pay-per-view he might be wanting to do. So we'll see. It'll be very interesting. Sabretooth, any comments on the news this afternoon?
Yeah, as far as Enzo goes, I mean, I can understand him wanting to, you know, like get back out there and work, you know, and check us out of the hospital and stuff. But he should have. But he should take into account though that even though he might feel well, he still has the flu and he's still a carrier. I mean, he can still pass that stuff on. I mean, and he should have taken that into account before he came there. He might have been feeling well, but he was still carrying that germ, though. So I only get the reason why he would want to do that. I mean, and like you said, Dez had like a past incident where guys were getting knocked out with that with a sickness, Roman Reigns and Bray Wyatt and them. So yeah, so it's understandable that they would send him back because I don't want that to happen again. And as far as Chris Benoit goes, I don't blame. I'm not gonna blame Jericho. I mean, like if they were friends, and like you said, I mean, like his condition was brought about. It was a condition that he had that made him do what he did. It wasn't like he was an all around evil guy. You know, I mean, he had a condition. That's why he did what he did. So, yeah. So I'm not going to get on Chris Jericho for that.
Yeah. No, me neither. Todd, what's your thoughts on the news? I mean, the one that we're not commenting too much on that I'm really a little worried about is Paige, because listen, Paige has had a history of neck injuries. And first it was she's fine, and now all of a sudden it's, oh, she can't – she's pulled off any of the tours, and now, well, we're going to keep her off of doing anything physical on Raw. If she's not on this week, there's trouble.
You're absolutely right there. If she doesn't appear on Raw this coming Monday, it's gonna hurt the WWE on that part.
Even if she appears, I mean, she appeared this week, but she didn't wrestle. If she doesn't wrestle, something's wrong. It's 3 weeks. It takes not long to find out whether you have a concussion or not. I've had two in my life, and I've known, you know, within hours of going to a doctor. So, very unusual. Anyway, let's get to SmackDown, because we already have – Derek in the chat room is already somewhat upset about this Shane McMahon, Daniel Bryan thing taking so much time out of SmackDown that other wrestlers really don't get a chance to show themselves. So we'll be discussing that, but let's take this in order. We have AJ Styles hit the ring and do a really good, I thought a really good promo. AJ Styles has come so far in his promo work. He started out in the WWE a mess on the mic. To say he was adequate would be stretching it and giving him the benefit of the doubt. And now he's at least decent to above decent. And he basically says, look, you know, I'm not going to blame whoever. I don't even know who's on anybody's side anymore. What I do know is that, this is getting ridiculous. I want this solved. Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon hit the ring. There's a long exchange there about what they're going to do. If Sami Zayn is going to, Kevin Owens is going to be barred from ringside. We have a problem. Houston, we have a problem, as they say. And that problem is very simple. This angle makes no sense. It's a good angle, and it's one that could hook people into it, but I can't get by the fact that it makes no sense. And the reason it makes no sense is Shane McMahon can easily say, Kevin Owens, you're banned from ringside. I don't have to have Daniel Bryan say it. Now, what they're going to try to say to you is, well, Shane McMahon is trying to give Daniel Bryan the benefit of the doubt. And since he is the one who hired him, he's letting him make the final decisions, even if he disagrees with them. But that doesn't fly. Because Daniel Bryan didn't agree to have him come out there. And he did it anyway. So what we end up getting, which makes zero sense, and kind of makes Daniel Bryan look like a tool, is Kevin Owens is allowed at ringside. For whatever reason, your guess is good as mine. But don't worry, because Shane McMahon will be out there to even the odds. But don't worry about that either, because Daniel Bryan will be out there to do what? No idea. But that's where it's left. And at the end of this segment, Mike, I was a little bit confused because once again, Daniel Bryan comes out, he's shaking hands with people, and so is Shane McMahon. They seem to be both doing the face thing. But Daniel Bryan's decisions more and more are looking heel. Because there is no justification to have Kevin Owens out there watching Sami Zayn's back. For what reason? It's a one-on-one match. And if Shane McMahon decides he's going to come out, then that would be equal because both people would have one person sort of watching. But then Daniel Bryan says, well, then I'll be out too. Almost saying, well, I don't trust Shane McMahon. Daniel Bryan's actions are looking more and more heelish as the weeks go by, Mike.
They really are. But he still gets that face pop when he comes out. I mean, that whole yes thing is still over in a big face way, even though he's acting more and more here. And we've said it before about AJ Styles. If AJ Styles had came to the WWE 5 years ago, you know, and he had his learning curve then, they'd have him for 10 years. They'd have had him for 10 years, and he'd have been carrying this company.
Yeah, no, there's no question about it. AJ Styles unfortunately arrived a little bit too late. But the Shane and Daniel thing, Sabretooth, is really – it's taken a weird turn, and it's the lack of logic in it is starting to bother me more and more each week.
Yeah, it's starting to bother me too because, like you said, all Shane McMahon has to do is just bar Kevin Owens from ringside. And with Daniel Bryan, given what happened last week, logic would dictate that he'd do the same thing.
Right. That's the point. You've nailed it. If Daniel Bryan is a face, he would say, given the fact that you clearly tried to interfere last week, I'm not going to let your partner do the same thing again this week. And Shane McMahon ran that by Daniel Bryan and said, did you see what happened last week? You want a repeat of that? And Daniel Bryan kind of closed his ears to that. That's very weird, and it seems very heelish to me, Sabretooth.
Right, especially when you got AJ Styles standing right there with you and he's still going to make that decision. You know, so, it's kind of odd. You know, it is a heel thing.
It's just bizarre. It's a little bit bizarre. And, again, I think they need to wrap this right away. They don't want to, by the way. They want to stretch this and stretch this and stretch this. Some people are saying they could stretch this past WrestleMania. We do have one news flash, though, about Daniel Bryan, and that is that Daniel Bryan has clearly said that while his contract doesn't run out until after WrestleMania, some people are saying well after, Daniel Bryan has made one thing very clear. He said, if I am not back in the ring by WrestleMania, I am going to assume I will never be back in a WWE ring, and then I will not be re-signing a contract. So they're going to try to get him into some kind of a match at WrestleMania, I would assume, if they want Daniel Bryan to stay. And that would mean he would have to know this a month or two before WrestleMania. So, I mean, it's got to be right away. He's going to have to know within, you know, late February, I would think, or mid-February, whether he's getting into a match or not, whether he's cleared or not. So this should be very interesting. So anyway, that we'll leave that alone. And up comes the Usos versus Benjamin and Gable. Now, I still say Shelton Benjamin is the invisible man. And by that, I mean he has shown no personality. He hasn't gotten over one bit. He's just like a guy that's with Chad Gable. And he's such a good athlete. But I'm telling you, that's what it reminds me of. It's like Gable and the guy that's with Gable. That's what it reminds me of. They haven't fleshed out any kind of personality or anything for him. But man, they can go in the ring. They really need to work hard on these guys if they want to use them, because they can deliver in the ring. And we already know what the Usos can do. And this was a really, really good match. And I'm not going to lie to you, I thought they won the belt. Now, I knew that it was the illegal guy who was pinning the wrong guy. I knew that. But I didn't think the referee knew it. I thought the storyline was going to be the referee just blew it and the referee's decision is final. That's what I thought the storyline was going to be. And they were going to have a rematch maybe at the Royal Rumble or something. So when they restarted the match, I'm like, whoa, okay. That's pretty cool. They bluffed me out on that. It didn't last much longer after that, but this was a really good match. And it shows what you can do if you really flesh out the story a little bit, I mean, I wasn't too high on Benjamin and Gable lately, but this was probably their best match overall. And once again, the Usos deliver, Mike. They almost never don't.
I mean, they almost never don't. And look, you can almost put them in a match with anybody on the SmackDown roster. And that includes the nothing that is the Fashion Police, and they're going to make them look good, and it's going to be a good match, you know? And that's the thing. We know where this is headed. We know what they want to do. They want to put those belts at some point, probably within the next month or so, around the Bludgeon Brothers. We know where this is headed, you know? And
yeah.
That's why... If it would allow them to keep the belt, I was going to say, well, I was thinking to myself, this is going to be one of these transitional championships things, because it's either going to go right back to the Usos, or the next guy up is going to be the Bludgeon Brothers. So.
Yeah, well, the thing about this is, I think the WWE is going to try hard to milk the Bludgeon Brothers a long time before they win the belts, only because they know they're going to have to lose them eventually, and there's going to be a little bit of luster that comes off that diamond when they lose their first match. You know, they're being portrayed as these unbeatable force. So they don't want to say, oh, well, you know, once they get beaten and they lose the belts and it's going to be, you know, for them, let's milk it for what it's worth. So you might see a longer period before the Bludgeon Brothers get that belt. I assumed it was going to be right away because WWE rushes things. But I think this time they've realized rushing it isn't going to help us. And from what I've seen later on in the show with the Bludgeon Brothers, it doesn't look like the Usos will be next up on their agenda. It was interesting. It was an interesting match. And I think that, the funny thing about this, was even though I don't like Benjamin and Gable much, because I just don't think they have much personality, I wasn't terribly upset when I thought they won it. I was like, okay, well, they'll be a good heel team and they're kind of beatable. So maybe Rusev Day, get set up for it. Maybe the New Day, maybe this is who the Bludgeon Brothers get it from. Or I wasn't too disappointed, but when the Usos then they restarted the match and the Usos won, I immediately went back to, okay, they're going to have to stall the Bludgeon Brothers. What's your thought, Sabretooth?
Yeah, I thought it was a very good match. And also, yeah, and you're right, though. I mean, I feel bad for Sheldon Benjamin because, I mean, like the biggest mistake they made, they should have put him on Raw with Kurt Angle, given those two guys' history. Put them on SmackDown. I don't know what they put him on SmackDown for. Given his history with Kurt Angle, they should have put him on Raw. And Chad Gable is, I mean, and I like Chad Gable because he reminds me of the old Scott Steiner, pre-Big Papa Pump days, you know? I mean, if he could do a Frankensteiner, I mean, because he wrestled
yeah, right?
just like the old. I mean, like, he wrestles just like the old Scott Steiner. Yeah, but they're pretty
Yeah, he's getting
team.
Over, too. He's getting over. I don't know. We'll see what ends up happening. The SmackDown has a very interesting dilemma all of a sudden, and that is they've got a few really good tag teams. They've hit lightning in a bottle, you know what I mean? Because to be perfectly honest, the Ascension is a really good tag team. They're not being booked as one, but they can be if they book them that way. And the Fashion Police are a really good tag team. Those guys are good wrestlers if they book them that way. So then you would have the New Day, the Usos, Gable and Benjamin, the Bludgeon Brothers, Fashion Police, the Ascension. You know, you've got a lot of really good tag teams over there. It's a good division. Really good division. So anyway, we get to the next match, which is the Welcoming Committee versus the Riot Squad, basically. And look, here's the deal with the Riot Squad. They're playing them the right way. They're not letting them be jabrones. They almost did by getting beat. And they, you know, they got beat this week, too, as far as after the match. But they're letting them win. And I think what happens after the match isn't so terribly important. The heels getting run off is okay. The heels looking weak after they won and saying, you know, looking cowardly and saying we're bailing, that's okay. I don't think that weakens them. What weakens them is when they get loss after loss after loss, and you say, well, why does anybody fear them? They never win. So I thought this match was okay. You know, I out of all of them, I feel sorry for Carmella. Her Money in the Bank means absolutely nothing. I mean, it just doesn't mean anything. They're not doing any storyline with it. They're just not doing anything with it. She's got less than just a couple of months to cash it in, and no one cares. So I think that's where the big story is, Todd, that nobody really even cares about this Money in the Bank anymore.
You're absolutely right there. Like you said, it was something like a couple months ago, like the very first Money in the Bank with the women in it, and now it's like, oh, now this is nothing. Like, don't have no prestige in it, like years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be something major, and they would build big storylines around it, and they would keep reminding you this is, you know, they call her Miss Money in the Bank, but they don't play it up to any extent, Sabretooth. It's like a prop.
And I don't blame Carmella. I blame booking, because because if a guy had that Money in the Bank, I mean, he'd be dogging the champion. He'd be dogging the Mary Stealth. I mean, a champ would be like looking over his shoulder every 5 minutes. But they're not doing that with these women, though. I mean, Charlotte should be worried about Carmella sneaking up on her and taking that belt.
You're right.
Carmella should be, and she should be focused on Charlotte Flair. She shouldn't be like tag teaming to fight the Rock. She should be focusing on the chance to cash in that belt. And also with that match, it made the It made those girls the first match look weak, though, because they lost the match. They got beat by them, but then Becky Lynch, Naomi, and Charlotte come out, and they beat the Riot Squad. So they undersold the Welcome Committee because they got beat by them, but those other three girls can beat them, though, you know? So I don't get that.
Yeah,
logic.
I'm not too worried about that, because at least they can fall back on, well, after all, we did have a hard match with the Welcoming Committee, and we weren't expecting Becky Lynch back, and we certainly weren't expecting Naomi running back. So, you know, we decided to take a powder. It's not too bad, I guess, but you're right. I mean, they have been doing that a lot with the Riot Squad, but they do that with heels sometimes, just make them look cowardly and opportunistic, and it's not necessarily a bad thing, Mike. What do you think overall?
I mean, it's not too much of a bad thing, but on the Carmella thing, it really hurt it when they made her win that briefcase the second time, you know. And we've gotten into that before. They never should have taken it away from her the first time, you know. That's when the heat really should have started with this thing, and they should have never taken it away from her the first time. So, you know, that's that. But yeah, I don't mind what they did with the Riot Squad. I don't, because you know, we knew that at some point Becky Lynch was going to come back from making whatever movie she was been making, and this was a good way to bring her back.
Yeah, I think so. What can you say about this? The women's division. It's a one story division. The story is all centered around the Riot Squad, and that's about it. And all the other women's reactions to the Riot Squad. The championship isn't even a big story anymore. The Money in the Bank. Why are we even watching a Money in the Bank pay-per-view? What did the Money in the Bank amount to this year? Baron Corbin cashing it in and not getting anything for it, or not even in a dramatic fashion, really. And Carmella still holding it when it doesn't mean anything. It's just meaningless. It's a shame. Anyway, we go to the tournament that's being held for the supposedly vacated U.S. belt. And Aiden English takes on Xavier Woods. Now, we should have known. Logic would tell you that the winner fights Mojo Rawley, because that's who's going to win next week. Zack Ryder's not winning. So we pretty much had to know that Xavier Woods was going to win, but I was hoping no, because you see, Aiden English is kind of a face in a way. At least in the reaction the fans give him, he's a little bit of a face. So I thought, well, maybe that's how they'll get Mojo over, is Aiden English is a fan favorite. Rusev will come out there with him and, you know, get the fans hyped. And then if he loses, Mojo will be the, you know, will get booed. But no, they let Xavier Woods win. Why either one of these guys was in the tournament is a mystery, as we discussed last week. It was a really good match, and it showed that Aiden English can really work. And, of course, we know Xavier Woods can work. And it showed Rusev's popularity again, as Rusev went out there and attempted to sing a version of Rusev Day song, which was pretty good, pretty funny. My worry, though, is they're going to kill this Rusev Day thing by making Aiden English look like a really, really, really weak link that's clinging to Rusev to even have any credibility at all. And that's going to not, that never works. Just look at Enzo and Cass. It didn't work with them. And it's not going to work here. We had said you have to let Aiden English look strong at some point. Because if he's just a guy that's riding off Rusev's coattails, just a reworking of Enzo and Cass, and it's not going to fly, Sabretooth, and it appears that's what they're doing.
And you're right, and that's why I don't get why he was even in this tournament. Because if he's supposed to, I mean, we all knew that he wasn't going to win this match for no U.S. belt. So to even have, we all knew he was going to lose, which makes him look even weaker. Like you said, I mean, he shouldn't even have been in this match. He's supposed to be in a tag team with Rusev. That's where that's where his strength is going to be. That's where his strength is going to be, in a tag team looking strong beside Rusev, not in a singles match getting beat in a singles match by Xavier Woods. I mean, so I don't, like you said, I don't get why they was even in this match. Because it didn't help neither guy out, really, because we all know he's one of these guys. Xavier Woods is not winning that U.S. belt. He's not.
That's the tragic thing. But they're not winning. That's what I said. It's so, you know, Xavier Woods is not winning. You know, if Aiden English won, he wasn't winning. You know, Mojo's not winning. And you know, Zack Ryder's not winning. You know, that's a shame. They could have had something kind of cool with this, but they kind of messed it up. They just didn't have enough people that they had a decent push for. I mean, you could argue that maybe Mojo, if they give him a real quick push, but that doesn't, I don't see it. Anyway, we get the Bludgeon Brothers one more time taking on the Fashion Police. And again, it's a squash match, you know. This time, this was just a setup for the Ascension to run down. And as God is my witness, I thought, this is going to be the moment where one of two things is going to happen. Either A, the Ascension is going to join the Bludgeon Brothers in beating up the Fashion Police, and they're going to reveal, we were just playing you this whole time. Keep getting you matches against these guys until, you know, just laughing at you. Thought that was going to happen, or I thought this is the moment where the Ascension is going to get reborn a little bit, and they're going to take it to the Bludgeon Brothers a little bit. Maybe surprise the Bludgeon Brothers enough so the Bludgeon Brothers kind of get bounced from the ring or something and, you know, head back to the dressing room shouting and yelling at them. Neither one of these things happened. Instead, they just got beat. They just got beat like animals. So I don't even know where this is going. Okay, so we get it. The Bludgeon Brothers can beat the Fashion Police and the Ascension at the same time. How does this help the Fashion Police or the Ascension in any way? At least if the Ascension joined in the beating, we would have the Ascension versus the Fashion Police, which would be a good match. At least if the Ascension got repackaged a little bit and you say, whoa, you know, we kind of forgot these guys were NXT champions, longest tag team champions ever, and, you know, Connor's quite a powerhouse in his own right. Maybe they're going to reboot these guys a little bit and make them what they used to be. No, neither one happened. They just got their head handed to them. So I'm not even sure what the point of the whole entire thing was, Sabretooth. Again, no logic to that.
Yeah, because like when I saw the Ascension run down that ring, I mean, I rose my feet because I thought like, okay, here's the moment after where they're gonna make these guys serious, and we're gonna have like a great feud between the Bludgeon Brothers and the Ascension. But but it didn't happen, like you said. I think I handled just like the fashion police. I mean, so I don't. I mean, they might as well. Their stock on SmackDown is nil now. I mean, when you think they're gonna like revamp these guys, I mean, and that was a great feud, these two teams, the Ascension and the Bludgeon Brothers. Like I said, I mean, like there are two throwback teams. You got like a Road Warrior type team going against the Moondogs type team. With these backwards, you know, that would have been great, but we didn't. But we're not getting that.
No, now, to be fair, some people are writing me saying, well, I think what's going to happen is that we're going to see both teams versus the Bludgeon Brothers. In other words, the first ever, like, handicap tag team match where you say it's not a three-way. It's two teams versus the Bludgeon Brothers, and in that match, probably the Ascension will turn. Okay, if that happens, okay. But I still say if you're going to make the Ascension turn, you got to make them look a little bit tough. You can't make them look like total jabrones, and that's what they look like. So even if that does happen, I still think it was handled wrong. At least you'd let them have a moment's offense. You know, just that 1 minute where you say, well, they're taking it to the Bludgeon Brothers, and then boom, okay, they didn't. I don't know. We'll see what happens with it. It just seemed like it was for nothing. So now we get to the moment of truth. We have Daniel Bryan out at ringside. We have Shane McMahon out at ringside. We have Kevin Owens out at ringside. There are more people at ringside than in the ring. Well, actually equal if you want to count the ref. And AJ Styles and Sami Zayn are putting on a really good match. And I'm saying to myself, well, where is this going to lead? At some point, you know Shane is going to do something. It's not going to be Daniel who makes the first move. It's going to be Shane. And basically what happens is Kevin Owens prevents the referee from making a three count by blocking his path back into the ring. A fact that was clearly seen by Daniel Bryan. Shane McMahon sees it and says, that's it, he's out. Which he could have done before this match ever started. Throws him out. To which Daniel Bryan says, and I'm left scratching my head, well, if Kevin Owens has to go, then why don't you go with him? Would you say that to your boss? And what the hell does one have to do with the other? It doesn't make any sense. Why don't you all go then? Why don't you all go and leave it a one-on-one match? Why would Daniel Bryan suggest, well, you leave too and I'll just stay? You'll just stay for what reason? It doesn't make any sense. So while Shane McMahon is bug-eyeing him about, well, how dare you say that to me, AJ Styles is distracted yet again. AJ Styles has got to be the most easy to work with wrestler in the world. Here is a man who arguably, in my mind, it's not even arguable, but I understand some fans don't feel that way. Arguably the best wrestler in the WWE. Arguably the best worker in the WWE. And I can give you a laundry list of people he has lost to, from Dolph Ziggler to James Ellsworth to John Cena to Chris Jericho and now Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. AJ Styles is willing to do whatever the hell you want him to do and makes it look good. That's why he's a valuable dude. And it never hurts him. He's bulletproof. It's not like, oh, AJ's lost too much. Now he's got to go to the mid-card. Nobody thinks that way. He's got that bulletproof thing to him that's really cool because he never was one of these guys that's like, I never get beat. He was smart enough to realize that can sometimes be an albatross around your neck, because then when you do get beat, the shine comes off you. If you're one of these guys who are, you know, 80-20 or 75-25, it's even better because you say, I don't know for sure he's going to win. You know, he's lost a lot to a lot of people. He might not. Kind of cool. Make Sami Zayn look good, even though it wasn't a perfectly clean victory. It still was with his finisher. And then AJ Styles snaps. Now, the one thing AJ Styles did not do well is I think the script was supposed to have AJ being sarcastic and say, if this is going to continue, hell, it may as well be a 2-on-1. That's what it is anyway. Being facetious, not meaning it. And then Daniel Bryan was supposed to say, that's a really good idea. The way AJ made it sound was, I really am asking for it. And then the announcers had to kind of back him up and say, I don't think he was being serious. I think he was just angry. So AJ might have blew that little nuance where he was supposed to be out of anger saying, it's always 2-on-1. It may as well be 2-on-1 in the ring. What's the difference if one's outside the ring? Just be 2-on-1. That's kind of what it was supposed to be. But either way, irregardless, Daniel Bryan putting two guys in the ring against one champion is a heel move. That's a heel move. So now there is no doubt in my mind that it's Daniel Bryan who's doing the flip. How can it not be? You saw the face on AJ Styles when he announced it was going to be the match. Styles was upset about it. Styles is going to say, how is this fair? You know, Shane is going to have words with him, say, how is it that two people, you know, it's not even a three-way match. It's two guys against one. It's not every man for himself. So it's not a three-way like Kane and Brock Lesnar and Braun Strowman. 2-on-1. How is that fair? AJ Styles, 220 pounds. It's not Braun Strowman. So that's a heel move. And I'm sure AJ Styles is going to confront Daniel Bryan about it and say, what the hell? How is this fair? Daniel's going to come up with something like, well, at least they're both in the ring at the same time. They can't both get in the ring at the same time. They have to tag each other, but at least you know what's going on. You don't have to worry about distraction you don't see. I know that's there's going to be some logic to it, but the bottom line of the situation is that's a heel move, Mike, and in my opinion, it shows that it's Daniel Bryan out of the two who they're going to flip.
It really does show that. And another thing it kind of shows to me is, and another way they could go with it is you can have AJ say something to the effect of, okay, I thought I could trust either one of you guys. I can't trust nobody. And I'm going to go and find some people I can trust, you know. I mean, and that's where we may see, you know, Nakamura or somebody else come in there as basically the only guys that AJ Styles can trust.
Yeah, I mean, it could get to that extent. They could do something like that. I don't know where this is leading. All I do know is that two things happened this week that make me feel that Dan Bryan's got to be the guy who's going to be heel. Purposely allowed Kevin Owens to be at ringside. And did not suggest that he was going to be at ringside until Shane McMahon said that I'm going to ringside. So it wasn't like he said, I'll keep Kevin Owens in check, Shane. He didn't do that. Two, he clearly saw Kevin Owens block the referee and then kind of got upset when Shane McMahon suggested Kevin Owens needs to go. He just interfered in what could have been the end of this match. And three, he made what most fans will say was a very unfair match on who has to be the number one fan favorite over in SmackDown, which is AJ Styles. So at some point, I think we're going to see something out of Daniel Bryan. I don't know how he's going to justify this. Normally, Daniel Bryan's character, the way they're writing for him, is that he has a skewed view of things, but he justifies it. For instance, he says, I don't want Kevin Owens or Sami Zayn fired because they're valuable to this company. That's a fact. So you can say that's true. Daniel Bryan's got a cooler head than Shane, and you shouldn't fire these guys. Two, he does say, well, Shane, you get hot-headed sometimes, and you react out of anger, and that's not good for business. He's right. So there's another notch for Daniel Bryan where you say his, you know, Shane's in the right, but Daniel is right too in the way he's thinking. You can't do that if you're the big boss. But last week, nothing Daniel Bryan did was right. There's no logic in having Kevin Owens come to ringside. None. There's no logic for Daniel Bryan to be down there as a second banana when Shane said he'd be down there, and there's no logic to making a 2-on-1 handicap match and rewarding guys who are very obviously trying to work the system. So there is no justification for these moves, Sabretooth, so I have to assume that that's Daniel Bryan's heel turn beginnings.
And my big question is, how can you have a 2-on-1 championship match? I mean,
I don't know how it's going to work.
And also, I mean, so I'm calling them now. What they're going to do, I think Shane McMahon is going to team up with AJ Styles, and it's going to be a tag team match. I don't know if the championship is going to be on the line still, but I bet that's what's going to happen. Shane is going to team up with AJ Styles, and at the Royal Rumble, if we're going to see Daniel Bryan's official heel turn.
You know, there are rumors floating around that says that Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon could stretch this thing all the way to SummerSlam, where there would be a loser leaves WWE, and that would be probably Daniel Bryan if he wasn't going to re-sign, because that would be about the time his contract apparently would expire. If not, and Daniel Bryan re-signs, then that's not going to happen. I'm not sure where this is going. I mean, there are some fans who are saying, look, they're leading you down this path that Daniel Bryan's going to turn heel, but in reality, he's going to screw Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn the whole time. I guess that could happen. But I'm not sure where that's going to lead unless it leads to Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan versus Owens and Zayn, which would be all right. But I think Derek in the chat room has it right when he said something's got to happen pretty soon, because this is a 2-hour show. Okay, and out of those 2 hours, an hour of this show was taken up by either matches that involve Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon, backstage segments involving Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon, or promos being cut by Daniel Bryan or Shane McMahon. And in that length of time, no Nakamura, no Randy Orton, no Bobby Roode, a little tiny thing with Baron Corbin saying he's in the Rumble. A lot of guys went unseen because you dedicated 1 hour. And that's weird. And I'm not sure this story merits that kind of attention, where one full half of this show, Mike, is about nothing but Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon's interaction with Owens and Zayn.
Right, you're right on that, and that's sort of weird on that, and that's the thing. Now, I mean, when the next pay per view is what, WrestleMania, right, or
Royal Rumble.
So, and that's what,
a couple weeks.
So, whatever's gonna happen, I mean, something better advance in this storyline. It can't just sit here on a treadmill, you know. And, okay, we're going to do this week, and then we're going to put them against each other again next week, you know, or we're going to do something with the referee the next week, or whatever. I don't know, whatever. Something's got to happen. It can't be just on a treadmill with this thing. And the fact of the matter is, I just don't see the end game right now.
You know, I don't either. I mean, I guess Shane McMahon could say, look, if you're going to make a 2-on-1 handicap match, then I get to choose the referee, and the referee is me. That could happen. What they're trying to do is this battle back and forth, where Daniel Bryan is saying, I was screwed over by the authority once. I'm not going to be a slave to the authority figures again. And Shane McMahon kind of saying, I'm not that guy. I'm trying to, you know, administer some kind of equality here. I don't know where it's going to lead. What I do know is that while it's a good enough storyline that I'm not down on the storyline itself, it does lack logic, and it's taking a lot of time away from pushing other people. And you need to do that, because this storyline, you see, the problem, gang, with WWE doing this is that if you don't like a storyline, let's say you're not into this Daniel Bryan thing, then there's no reason for you to watch SmackDown. That's not good. Usually, if there's 3 or 4 storylines running, you might say, I don't really like this particular storyline. I don't care who attacked Enzo, but I do care about this. So I'll watch who attacked Enzo to get to this. Or I do not care about this, but I want to know who attacked Enzo. When you have multiple storylines that could be compelling, you're not reliant upon just that one for your audience. And SmackDown's forgotten that. There isn't any other storyline. The other storyline that they're going to tell you is, well, the U.S. belt. That's not a good storyline. That's a tournament. It's not a storyline. The Riot Squad thing, that's not a storyline because nothing's happening in it, except every week they win and then get chased off. That's not a storyline. We want some behind the match storyline. We're not getting it. We're not getting that at all. So it's a one-trick pony right now. SmackDown is Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon. What's going on with them? If you don't care for that storyline or you find that storyline silly or boring, there's no reason for you to watch SmackDown at all. And that's a dangerous precedent to take, Sabretooth, when it comes to a show like this, because it means viewers could turn out.
And very dangerous, seeing as how it's just a two-hour show, as to where Raw is a three-hour show, yet they got more storylines, you know. I mean, but they can, though, because they're 3 hours. Same time, though, SmackDown has to compensate by having, like, they have to have, keep people interested. They have to, like, keep storylines, keep, like, I think they have, like, at least, like, three or four storylines going for a two-hour show. They need that, but like you said, we're not getting that, though. We've got one big storyline, maybe two, with the US show, and they can't do that. Like you said, I mean, like, no Nakamura, no Randy Orton. I mean, I'm sure people pay the money to come see those guys. Nakamura, yeah. Randy Orton, yeah. I mean, so we're not getting them. So it's like that. It's good about their fan base.
Yeah, I mean, and look, you could argue, okay, Randy Orton wants some time off. He doesn't need to be on SmackDown every week. Okay, that's fine. But then could we see some guys getting built up aside from this? You know, could we see an undercard guy start to rise, you know, where you say this guy's going to be something? You know, we're seeing that on Raw. We're seeing, we don't know where Elias is going, but it looks like it could be to a higher level. We're seeing that on Raw. We're seeing certain things. We're seeing the Braun Strowman storyline. We're seeing the storyline with Jason Jordan and where it might go with Seth Rollins. We're seeing different storylines evolve on Raw. It's a one-trick pony over on SmackDown, and that's not a good thing, Todd, because if you don't like that one storyline, then I can't tell you why you should tune in to see the show.
You're absolutely right there. If you don't like the storyline, that ruins the whole thing.
And you don't even get to see some of your favorites. I mean, at least I thought to a certain extent we might see Nakamura or Dolph Ziggler maybe make an appearance and say, I don't know what this tournament's for. There's got to be some other storylines floating around. More than just the Bludgeon Brothers beat up another team, more than just the Usos. I mean, that Usos was a great match. The match itself was great. No storyline came out. What's the storyline? It's not like you say, well, okay, maybe they'll have another match, but there's no backstory to it. There's no, I need to beat Sheldon Benjamin and Gable because they did this to us or they said that. There isn't any of that. I just don't think, you know, I don't think SmackDown should have become the show that's about the general managers and the people behind the scenes. That was supposed to be the wrestling show, Sabretooth, and it's the exact opposite right now.
Right, because now you're getting what the same thing people hated about Raw. That's the way you had the authority. I mean, it's not exactly the authority, but in the way it is, though, because you got, I mean, because the storyline is all about the people who are running. That's
yeah,
the storyline.
It is, and it's not even at least with the authority storyline, you had that caveat of, well, whatever they say goes, so they can really screw with people's lives. On SmackDown, it's almost like, well, I'm letting Daniel Bryan do what he wants because I'm the guy who hired him, but he's not above me. I could overrule him at any time. I'm choosing not to. Well, then part of what Daniel Bryan's accomplishing is Shane McMahon's fault, no?
So, like I said, though, but they're going to need, like, more. I mean, I don't know if it's because of, like, lazy booking or because or what. I mean, because it's got 2 hours, just 2 hours, so it feels like they can't fit that much into 2 hours. But they really can, though. I mean, like storylines just waiting to be developed, like Carmella and that Money in the Bank. I mean, they could have put that in tonight. It's like they're sitting on stuff, but they're not using it.
Yeah, that's my feeling exactly. You could have a great Money in the Bank storyline running simultaneously with the Riot Squad doing things backstage as well as in the ring. That would be a storyline. Not just in the ring. They have to be doing stuff backstage that's leading to feuds developing. You could have something going on with the, you know, we supposedly have Mojo and Zack Ryder. How come we only saw Mojo saying, I'm going to destroy Zack Ryder this week? How come we didn't see, like, Zack Ryder backstage take Mojo out? You know, so we say, oh, this will be a pretty good match. Maybe they will let Zack, you know, recover and win one. There are things you could do with that storyline. There are things you could have done with, you know, somebody coming down during the Usos and the Benjamin and Gable match to say, oh, well, I, you know, maybe something's going to happen here. They purposely just sort of backed off and said, no, our storyline is Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon are at each other's throats, and that's enough. And we'll have good matches interspersed between that, but no major storylines to weigh you down. The only thing you have to think about is Shane and Daniel. We don't want you distracted. Shane and Daniel, there's great matches, but they're just matches. The story is Shane and Daniel. They undersell their audience when they think we can't follow two or three storylines at once.
You know, here's the bad thing. I go back to the, let's go back almost 30 years to the point of where you only had 1 hour a week of the WWE, and that was Superstars. And on Super, and this is in the late 80s, early 90s, and this is Superstars. This is 1 hour a week where they had multiple storylines running at the same time, and they would do that. I mean, they had a tag team storyline. They had a thing with Hogan, whatever it was with Hogan at the time. They would have whoever was the Intercontinental Championship at the time, you know, that storyline. And it would somehow run right into each other and stuff like that. Why can't they do that here? And that's the point. I mean, yeah, I'd love to see Bobby Roode, especially that now that I know that his ex-partner is done with Impact and has said that he would love to come back to NXT and possibly the WWE. I would love to see Carmella. They do something with Carmella, you know.
They could have at least shown Bobby Roode. They could have at least had Roode come out scouting, you know, a match with Aiden English and Xavier Woods. There's so many things that you could have done to just help it along a little. And it just seemed like their philosophy is, no, we don't want to distract you from that one storyline that we want. So very quickly, guys, let's rate SmackDown. Todd, I'm going to go to you first this time. What's your rating on SmackDown?
I'm going to give it a D.
Wow, he's going to give it a D. Okay, he totally thought it sucked. I'm going to give it a C plus. I think that the storyline's starting to weigh me down a little, and I'm starting to lose interest in it because it's illogical. But man, there were some good matches. Sabretooth, what's your thought?
I'm going to give it a straight C. The highlight being that a tag team match with the Usos and Benjamin and Gable.
No question about it. That was the highlight. That was a very, very strong match. Mike, what's your rating?
I'm going to give it a C-plus as well. And I do love right before they had that match in that tournament, when Xavier Woods comes out and he says, if I win this title, we all win this title. Kind of teasing Freebird's rule with a single title.
You know, at least it's something. He's not going to win it, but I'll tell you this, at least it makes fans think, oh, that would be kind of cool. That's what they need to do more of, make the fans think. Anyway, we'll be back here Sunday with more Wrestle Chat Radio. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestle Chat Radio. WrestleChat Radio is a Savage Blade production.